Welcome to the What Now podcast. I'm your host, Daryl Elliott, and I'm here with our esteemed panelists, Monica Ojo and Reggie McClurkin. Archbishop Chase is not available today, so we are going to engage into some conversation, things that are relevant to our community, to our society, and where do we go from here? We just come off of a monumental election, an incredible change in our society, so we need to come up with some answers and solutions that are to the benefit of our entire community. So, hey, family, how are you all doing today?
Hey, Brother Daryl, how are you today, my friend, my brother?
I'm doing all right. It's good to see you guys.
Yes, that's it.
Well, there's a lot going on, and we really want to dig into these conversations. And Monica is the former mayor of Hanover, Pennsylvania. Yes. She's also a community leader, and she spends her entire life in public service. Reggie is a recording artist, international recording artist. You may know the famous McClurkin family. Yes, he is that McClurkin.
Yeah.
And he is also a very known and involved social activist. So we're grateful. Archbishop Chase is the Chancellor of Metropolitan Seminary, and also he is a global church leader. I'm the president and I'm the founder and CEO of Diadem Technologies, and I'm well-known in the business and technology community, electronic banking. So we all come from our different spaces and perspectives. Yes, I am a preacher. Some of you may know me as being a preacher, and some of you may know me as a musician, but I am here representing the business community. I'll leave all the other stuff up to these guys. They're a lot more entrenched than I am. So we want to spend a lot of time in these conversations and really come up with these ideas and solutions. So let's get to it, guys. What I want to do is I'm going to play a video that's related to our current maturing generation. Well, we know it's Gen Xers.
Yes,
and there was a video that was put out, and then there was an instant reaction. So I want to play this clip, and then I want to see what you guys have to say about it to kick off our conversation. We're going to talk about DEI, and we're also going to talk about the changing tide in our social dynamic. So check out this clip.
Why are black Gen Xers so pissed off nowadays? You guys...
Because we were hoping you'd be different. Turns out, you weren't. But you know, our parents may have fought for civil rights, but we were the ones who truly had to implement it. We went to school with you. We've been knowing you since you were kids. And when we were kids, you promised that you would be a different type of person. You promised that when you got older, you were going to make a difference in this world. And we believed you because you were our friends. We went to prom together. My goodness, we fell in love with hip-hop together. We even loved your music. It was the MTV generation. Your music was our music. Our music was your music. And we loved everything together. But when you had an opportunity to give us that promotion and give us that job, you acted just like your parents. When you had an opportunity to give us that loan, you acted just like your parents. When you had an opportunity to give us the breaks that we needed in order for things to be a little more equal, you acted just like your parents. And dear God, when Trump came about, you turned into your parents. So yeah, we are the F around and find out generation. And truth be told, somebody needs to let you know, while our parents might not have complained to everyone else, they came home and complained to us. So when you saw that guy, or your parents saw that guy who was shining their shoes, he didn't like your parents. He didn't like the way your parents were treating him. I don't care how nice he was and how he called them by name. No, you turned into exactly what your parents turned into. And that guy was angry and bitter, and we choose not to turn into that. So when Barack Obama became elected, you certainly started to show your true inner hatred. And so, yeah, we're the F around, find out generation. We're going to let you know. We don't like it.
All right, guys.
I love it.
All right.
Wow.
So I figure we kick it off with a bang on our first episode, our first show. Any yeah. reaction here?
Oh my Monica. God, there is Monica. So much reaction to that, because it is so much truth about it, and it really just lets you know where we are in this country. And even though we believe that we have progressed in some areas, like having an African American president or person of color as vice president, we still haven't gone behind. We haven't gone beyond that implicit bias, yes, that we have, mm-hmm, in this community. There is still a power struggle in this country that is very deafening, and it's very much a part of society, especially mainstream society.
Yes, yes,
and their
yes.
goal is to maintain power, and that power, unfortunately, is in their whiteness. And mm-hmm. so it does show itself when it's being threatened, when they feel that someone's going to come in and take the place, or it's going to look different for them. So you know, I'm really glad that she is aware of it, and it's not an anger type thing. It's just an awareness that we are aware of, and previously, in generations previous to us, we weren't able to really tell anyone how we felt
exactly.
about that.
Right, right.
As she talked about.
Yeah, yeah, Reggie.
Well, Monica, you really hit the nail on the head, because I absolutely love that clip. I wish I can send her a bouquet of flowers, because the reality is this. Alluding to what she just said, I just, like I said, experienced that on another, in another setting, because it's not just implicit anymore. That's the thing that gets me. It's no longer implicit.
Right.
It's right out there in our face. And so it's going to really require, I think, equal response, immediate response. Because like I said, I'm just, you know, my wife keeps telling me, she says, I'd just be so worried, because you don't even hold back. You instantly go into attack mode. You instantly, you know, respond, because the ignorance of some people. I saw a gentleman with a T-shirt on saying, don't let your president get your behind whipped and things like that, because they are not only empowered and have been emboldened by what their new president has done and said, but they realize, and I had an older white person who is really a Caucasian, someone, I don't call them friends, I just say really, you know, they're acquaintance and an associate that we deal with. But the reality is, not only have they become their parents, some of them have become worse than their parents because of their fear. They realize that they're becoming a minority. They realize that the pendulum has swung the opposite way. And like, you know, this so-called friend told me, the real fear is that they are afraid that we're going to treat them the same way they've treated us for 400 right. years. And so that's why, like I said, I'm not pulling no punches. I'm letting people know that, like I said, you are the same one we profess, especially with our Daryl, our Christian friends, our fellow ministers and all that type of thing. Mm-hmm. I said, for all of these years, you know, you all have been taking the Bible, and you're the same ones who used the Bible against my great-great-grandparents through the slave years of slavery and stuff like that. And it was all geared toward trying to keep us in our place. But this new generation now, like you said, you know, if around and found out generation, they're not going to accept, tolerate, nor put up with that. We're at a crucial, you know, fork in the road now. People are really ready to die now, because mm-hmm. we see what it is. And like I said, Daryl, you see my post. You know me. And I, you know, I'm just so amazed I haven't had, you know, Secret Service tapping on my door yet, because I'm going right up to the line. And I'm going to shout it from the mountaintop for the next 4 years. I'm going to let people know, I don't care what nobody says, this man is a Russian plant. This man, it's like I said, my post just said it, it's like a Trojan horse. We have allowed and sat back and watched this happen, and now all the stuff is ready to hit the fan. So that clip was right on point. That has made my day. That has made my day. I got to find who that young lady is. That made my day.
Well, the funny thing is that I started to wonder, why do you fear that you're going to suffer retribution when you yourself was not the slave owner or the captor, and then it dawned on me. They were living in houses that were holding these strong feelings, and they grew up with them. So whatever was the fear of those who were closer to the offense has been passed down to
children. Passed down.
We are the first generation. Anyone born after or within 1965 mm-hmm. is the first generation that was born with civil rights, with the right to vote, with those. So we are dealing with a massive, massive pushback and from that era, because we are dealing with two sides of the coin. We're dealing with the side that was in the home that was mm-hmm. doing the discriminating, and we're dealing with the side in the home that was in the struggle to overcome discrimination.
Exactly.
The fear seems to be stemming from the parents, and now it's come up almost in spades.
Oh, yeah.
not realizing that black people in particular aren't focused on revenge, especially this generation is just focusing on trying to get their money. That's what they need to understand. That you're dealing with a generation that is not preoccupied with going to knock on your door to drag mm-hmm. you out and beat That's you it. Up. They only care about getting their money right. So That's it's a misguided fear and a misguided anxiety that they possess, and they're doing all these things. They're doing all these things in vain because it's totally missing the mark. When you talk to the majority of black people in America, mm-hmm. they're not preoccupied on getting the white man back. They are preoccupied with trying to do anything else that any normal human being really wants to do. Provide Absolutely. For their families, have a leg up in society, and to live in peace. I think that we need to somehow find a way, and here's the peacemaker coming out here, but we have to find some kind of way to effectively message on both sides.
And the question is, Daryl, is that our responsibility at this point?
Good.
We have done it. We've been the apologists and this, that, and the other. But I will guarantee you that many of us have family ties to this country that goes back to the Mayflower.
Yes.
Okay?
That's right.
So we're just as much part of this country as anyone else. But I think because we're in the minority group, being African American, 14% in this country, there's That's this right. notion that we have to be the peacekeepers, that we have to be the one that change attitudes and moods, and that we have to act a certain way. Well, right. we're Americans. Yeah.
Right.
And you know that the minute you leave this country, they will let you know in a minute that you're an American. They're And you're acting like an American. and everything you do is based on the culture. So I think that, full turn now.
I think that's really good. That's really good, Monica. From my perspective, I don't think the weight is on black people to try to constantly do the messaging. I think part of what we are calling the FAFO season here mm-hmm. is that they have to find out. So the pain comes to them apart from us. See, the thing is, what they don't realize, and I have to go into all these dark spaces and corners in the internet, and I'm fighting with a lot of people that are on the other side of the spectrum.
You and me both,
And I have to tell them, you have to understand, you are going to probably suffer more than me.
Absolutely. And in the long run.
And that's
guaranteed.
And this administration is an equal opportunity screwer. Don't think just because you cast your vote and you wore your red hat that you're not going to feel the effects that you thought everyone else that was not like you was going to feel. It's going to come to you first, because who's suffering? The farmers. They're already talking about selling their farms.
Exactly.
veterans. Well, it's more white veterans than anybody else. So when you look at the people being harmed, these are people who are being harmed that have never had to feel this type of affliction.
Exactly.
Whereas you think you're going to harm a people who already have been harmed. So you don't think that you're really going. Don't think you're really going to do that much against black people. Because don't get it twisted. I might be a CEO, but I grew up in the hood. I grew up in a small house. I grew up in a city, and I grew up with not much, until things changed in my life. So
we know how to make a pot of beans. That's what I'm saying.
And we're built for this. We're built for this. They're the ones who, like I said, I saw some of the farmers that you were talking about, and it really blows me away that you see these white farmers now. They had this farm up there talking about they had been farming for generations. They are the same farmers who sat back and said nothing when they were screwing over the black farmers who never got the same benefits that were being, every time they did think pass bills for farmers, they excluded the black farmers. Black farmers, like I just saw the guy on TV, on CNN last week, he says 20 years ago, they had more than 1 million acres of farmland in black farmers. Now it's down to less than 100,000 acres because they have sold it all. Because they did not get none of the benefits, they did not get none of the loans, they did not extend all that. But now these same white farmers are talking about how they've lost 5 little weeks that this man has been in office.
Mm-hmm.
All of them are talking about they had these contracts, they had these agreements, and one or two things have happened. They pulled back the all the contracts, and or all the laborers are gone.
Right.
Everybody who was working their land, now all of their crops are rotten. Nobody is there to work the land. And so now they realize we voted for this, and the guy was telling them, but this is what you voted for.
This is what we're built for.
We're going to survive one way or the other. We've been in survival mode since the Mayflower. So we good to go. We're going to, these 4 years, whatever it is, I have a countdown of the days. It's just like 420 some days, 24 days, three, something like that. We can be okay in the long run. Yeah, it's going to be a little pain, but not like it is for these white people who've been so entitled for so long and sat back and watched everybody else, and they voted thinking they were going to be immune. It's not going to touch them. And already the veterans, the farmers, all these other business people, they see it's impacting them. Now they want everybody to come and like, wait, we need to unite now. Where were you for all these years? We've been trying to get you to even consider our plight,
Well, what they did.
Go ahead, Monica.
I just
wanted to add to that as well. When you talk about that, the 92% of African American women who did not vote for Trump really vigilant about keeping and holding still with democracy, and was once again disappointed when white women decided to vote with their husbands to select Donald Trump.
That's it.
And there's a growing movement, and it concerns me a little bit, but I'm not so concerned. But I see that there's a major wedge now between African American women and white women, and their level of trust for them. Especially as we see, all the actions and activities coming out of Washington, D.C.
Yes.
with President Trump and some of his outrages, these trade tariffs and, the fallback on that, the DEI, those all have impacts on women.
Absolutely.
More specifically, women who are in the workplace, it impacts them more. And what I see with women is that it's very difficult to have conversations with women now, but people are like we need to know more about African American women. We need to learn from you and this, that, and the other. I see African American women just kind of like, no, I didn't know enough about you.
You were teaching a good 50 years. I mean, weren't were we not paying attention is the question, you know?
And that's the answer too. They were not paying attention, because right now, like I said, and that's why, Monika, I take my hat off to you all, because it's the Black women who've kept this country afloat. I look how they've treated Stacey Abrams. And like I said, their fear and everything else, right before, you know, all through October, first week of November, right before the election, all of these white women were talking about, no, we're going to vote for our body. We're going to vote for the right to have our body. But yet, when it was time to go into that booth and pull that lever or, you know, fill out the cards, you know, the ballots, they, like I said, voted with their husband. They voted with their whiteness, because at the end of the day, this is the thing that has offended me more than anything else. And I tell all of my friends who work in corporate America and work on these jobs, for years, you've worked and sat right next to people who brought in little cookies and cakes and everything else. You thought you had really forged true, solid relationships. But when they went home, you were still a nigga. And I don't want to say, we won't say that on the podcast. But when they went home, we were still called the N-word. When they went home, they still let their entitlement and their supremacy be manifested and take priority, because we were just a convenient, I have a Black friend, you know, to be spoken of. But in their hearts, their entitlement always reigns supreme. So that's why, like I said, my post, I'm not feeling sorry for nobody. I'm not shedding no tears for nobody, nor will I lift one finger to accommodate, assist, or help anybody now who now realize that what we've been going through for all of these 400 years or whatever, now they're getting a taste of their own medicine, and it was self-inflicted. So I'm sitting back with, like I said, my popcorn, and I'm enjoying the new episodes, because they never thought it was going to impact them. Never.
I think where we are right now within the community is the Black community is not available right now. Leave a message after the beep. I think you know, after this election, you know we're not able to receive your call right now. You know, if this is an emergency, call your closest white friend or something. It just seems that is the general attitude within the African American community. Now, the funny thing is that the other marginalized groups are now just finding out seem to be just finding out that they're marginalized. What about that? I mean, you know, I tell you what, hold that thought. We're gonna run to a quick commercial. Okay. We're gonna talk about it real quick.
Absolutely.
Okay, and then I think that's a good conversation right there. Okay, so we'll be right back after this.
Introducing our Small Business Make More Save More package from Payments Factory. Increase your business revenue by offering your customers more options of when and how to pay. Surveys show that 35% of small business customers are interested in paying by text to their phone. That number almost doubles to 62% of people under the age of 35 who prefer to pay by text message. Our Make More Save More package allows you to send payment requests to your customers via text message and email, all while eliminating complex credit card processing fees with this simplified program. In addition, you have access to next day funding, real-time reporting of all transactions and payments, and 24/7 access to your online merchant portal and statements. Our free terminal program is available to merchants that meet certain qualifications and would like to take in-person payments via chip cards and contactless payments, such as Google Pay and Apple Pay. Act now to also receive a $25 dining certificate redeemable for 6 months worth of digital savings coupons at your favorite chain restaurants, or $25 certificate to visit and support a local favorite restaurant. Speak to a representative today to see how Payments Factory can help you increase your bottom line. Schedule an appointment to learn more about this program and how we can help your small business to make more and save more today.
Payments Factory is a subsidiary of Diadem Technologies. If your business needs any assistance in making more money and saving more money, feel free to contact us at paymentsfactory.co, and our representatives will be happy to assist you. So, guys, we are really great. We are really touching on something here, because it came to me that you have communities that are just finding out, they are just finding out that they are marginalized. I don't know why they didn't, I mean, the mistreatment didn't tell them, the low pay didn't tell them. I don't know how they didn't know that they were marginalized, but now you have a lot of those, especially in the Latino community.
Oh yes.
They thought that they were only going to take the bad ones. And maybe I'll share that clip another time, but you heard them say they thought that they were only, they said they're not going to take any of us because we're not criminals.
Right.
And they didn't realize that being who they are is the crime. Are you guys seeing that as well? Because and back to the farmers, before I get to that, the farmers, they didn't realize when they pulled that lever that they were going to decimate the payouts. And they did not make the connection, because it was never on the radar. USAID was never on the radar. And they don't realize, they didn't realize that all of these programs that are being cut are directly tied to their paycheck.
Directly.
So they did not understand the through line when the campaign took place, and they said they're going to slash this and slash that and slash the other thing, Medicare, Medicaid, slash everything. You know, grandma needs to pull her weight now. She doesn't deserve a Social Security. All of these things they didn't realize, that there was a through line directly to their wallets. But to the issue of those who are marginalized, just finding out that they are marginalized, I think that now that they see it, is it too late? That's the question. Is it too late for them?
Well, go ahead, Malik.
So I don't think it's too late. I really don't think it's too late. I think people just need to get involved, and they need to realize that they have not been involved in government. And a lot of people honestly shy away. Oh, I shy away from politics. Well, politics equals people. So, you know, even getting involved at the local level, I've been a mayor, I've been a city council member. I know how unattended these meetings are unless there's something really, really going on. So basically, we have gotten complacent as a people in America altogether. We haven't taken the bite of democracy the way we should have. So we've ingested this and assuming that this structure that we're living in would last forever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But in societies, in many older societies, we're only 400 years old.
Right.
And it can end tomorrow. I'm not very hopeful that we'll be able to get out of this situation, but the power of the people, you know, have to come into play, and that's going to take more than, well, you know, we get out on the street. It's going to make some coerced efforts to get involved in politics, understand what's going on in their community, and actually voting the right people in, and not voting with emotion, and not voting with, we need to get rid of those others, and that's the reason why we don't have. When you have 20% of the 20%, 80% of the resources in the hands of 1% of the population, that means we're scrambling for less and less of a piece of pie.
Right.
And that should not be true. You know, the wealth should be a little bit more equitable than it is.
Right.
As long as we continue not to get involved, not to be at those local meetings, at our local council meetings, at our state representatives contacting them, you know, the voices that they hear are those of the lobbyists and the special interest groups.
Right. Reggie?
And they're putting politicians in that really don't have a heart for the people. They will just do whatever they need them to do to advance them to the next level.
Now, the question is, are they really politicians, or are they really businessmen that have masqueraded as politicians? They're not public servants. They're private interests.
I think for the most part that they're, you know, they're advancing, you know, whatever business structure it is. And in many cases, these people don't have a lot of money themselves, but it does elevate them to a certain status being in position. Right. So the answer is no, they don't have a true heart for public service. And honestly, in this day and age, and I've seen it from every level, I don't see it being it's becoming a thing of the past to see people actually in office, you know, they have a true heart for the community.
But, right. And Monica, you're so right, because, you know, that's, like I said, unfortunately, my Southern roots, you know, I was always taught to, you know, look out for my fellow man and, you know, brotherhood. And like I said, do unto each others as you would have them do unto you. And that's what breaks my heart more than anything else when it comes to our political structure here in America, KKKA, and because I see people, they go out here for what, 4, 5, 6 months and ask you to vote for them, and the moment they get in there, they change up. You know, it's all about the lobbyists. They have their ear, and I've been watching these, you know, town hall meetings by these Republican, yeah, you know, representatives, and the people are rising up. I mean, the people are not looking like us. These are the people who, like I said, all went in that booth and voted for somebody thinking that it was not going to impact them, thinking they were, like you said, they were above it all, and thinking, you know, that, like I said, this was going to be, as some of the Christian televangelists and all those people saying, this man was sent by God, only to now realize, like I said, back to my, he's a planet, you know, operative of, you know, our arch enemy, Russia. And now that you see these people now crying, I saw, you know, right before we came on, I was reading an article online about the Muslims, how they all, just like, you know, our Hispanics and Mexican and Latino brothers and sisters, all of them were convinced that it's not us, because we're the good ones. And they had the guy on there crying, because they said, Mr. President, Mr. Trump, please, you sent my wife, my father. And all now that they are seeing that it's too late, they have buyer's remorse. But when you look at the politicians, I thank God, I'm so grateful that we still have some people. When, you know, I always be wondering who are going to be the new generation of leaders. And I look at people like Jasmine Crockett, and that gives me so much. She gives me so much hope, because she is like a pit bull. She's not going to back down. And Monica, with you being a mayor and stuff like that, I know you well enough, and I know, you know, that you had the heart of the people, you know, and as you served and things like that. But what happens to these people? And I see people go in office not being, you know, having you know, financial worth of, you know, $500,000 in less than 10 years. You know, look at all the senators and congressmen. They go in, you know, and now within 2-3 years, they're worth $5-10 million. Mitch McConnell went in being dirt poor, and now he's ready to retire. And I will go to my grave blaming him for all of this, because he was the one that, you know, pushed the button for them not to impeach him that third time, which would have made him forever ineligible to, you know, serve in public office. Right. But I mean, like I said, you know, I keep telling the Christians, you can't be sitting back just saying like, well, I'm going to wait on the Lord. I'm trusting God. He's going to take care of it. It's time for the people to do more than march. I'm happy for these boycotts, but we have to do so much more. And it's going to begin with, we as a people, the African-American peoples, reminding them that you did this. You voted for this. This is what, don't come crying on my shoulder now, because you did this. And so at this point in time, I'm going to look out for my family. And if they feel that's not the Christian thing to do, I'm going to look out for people who look like me. I'm supporting people who look like me. Because at the end of the day, we keep forgetting that we come from that legacy of being kings and queens and royalty. And we've bought into this thing of trying to act and mimic and take on the characteristics of the oppressor, when we had everything in our hands from day one that we could have overcame all of this craziness.
Well, you know, the thing that I think about is that we are dealing with a situation where, you know, I think you're dealing with a group of people in African American in the African American community as watching everyone just finding out. We have become well, where we were the primary participants in saving democracy. Yes, we have now quickly receded into becoming the primary observers of the burning down of America.
Of the burning, that's right.
And we talked about the other day, there's a piece of artwork that's circulating over the internet of the women sitting on top of the roof watching the city burn, saying, "We tried to tell you." And this is, I think this is something to be clear, that there comes a time and a season in, within a cycle of a society that people are not required to keep doing all the heavy lifting. I think that's the fair thing to say because I'm gonna tell you what happened one time when Baltimore went through that Freddie Gray incident. Well, those students who started that riot came from my alma mater. And I built a recording studio there. I did a lot.
Douglas, right?
For Douglas Hospital.
Right.
I built a recording studio there. I helped. I sat on the board. I was no longer on the board at the time, but I sat on the board for the technology, the media and technology school, and the music careers program. And I got phone calls, and they were calling me, saying, "Aren't you going to go out there and get on the front lines to tell them to stop?" I said, "For what?" And I said, do you think putting me on the front lines for a bunch of enraged teenagers who don't give 10 cents about who I am,
exactly,
that's going to stop what's going on right now? Sometimes there's not much you can do because of where you are in the cycle of things. It might have been an earlier time we could have been out there and told them to stop, but because so many things have reached a fever pitch over the past decade. Trump represents that fever pitch, and so what I'm saying is that. And as one who represents Wall Street and K Street, I don't want my politicians to be businessmen a lot of times.
Exactly.
I want them to be public servants because public I know my fellow brethren in the business community. They are not going to look out for you. Their first instinct is to look out for themselves.
So
I'm not a person that subscribes to, "Oh, he's a businessman, he'll straighten this out." No, he's a businessman. He's going to find every red cent to dry out for himself. I said to my wife, "There's not a bank account that brother couldn't dry out." And I think that we're in that phase. So let's move on to the next topic. And we wanted to talk about DEI for a second. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to play you another clip, and I want to get your reaction. DEI is now under attack, as we know. Programs have been taken away, and we want to take a moment and have that discussion. And so we'll be right back after this clip.
When you see major companies, Fortune 500 companies taking hits and some taking gains because of diversity, equity, and inclusion. And some would say, like, "Yo, we going AI. I don't want to feel obligated to do certain things," but for the certain people who have been oppressed, suppressed, and forgotten, we need our jobs. We need equal rights. What's your stance on that?
I don't care about DEI. I've said in op-eds in Time Magazine, Black Enterprise, and Fortune, you want to kill it, kill it. It's already been weaponized. It's been made political and emotional and you know, it's dead. DE&I as a program is effectively dead. I don't care about DE&I. I love diversity. And I love math because it doesn't have an opinion. And God has a sense of humor.
Right.
So for the first time in history, this country can't succeed without all of us. In 1950, America was 90% white. Not 1850, Ken. 1950. Today, America's 40% black and brown. Within 10 years, there'll be a majority of minorities. Mm-hmm. The biggest economy in the world, the U.S. First of all, you never had a superpower that wasn't the economic power at the same time in the history of the world. Rome, France, Germany, you never had a superpower that wasn't economic. So we're the superpower, we're the economic power. And 70% of the U.S. economy, about $29 trillion, is consumer spending. That's you and me going to restaurants, going to lunch, playing video games, buying them, buying our phones. That's consumer spending. Or the plane tickets that we bought. That's us. The future of this economy, you cannot. My rich friends eat, my poor friends do better if only to stay rich. Even the racist wins when black people succeed going forward because GDP rises. We're having the wrong argument. In fact, we're arguing. There's no need to argue. There's not enough college-educated, successful white men that drive GDP, gross domestic product, for the next 20 years. So unless my white friends want to be speaking Mandarin in 20 years, meaning Chinese, or taken over by Russia, which is not likely, but unless you want to be speaking another language, we better figure out in the next 5 or 10 years that we're better together. So this is what's happening now is fear. This is a third Reconstruction. First Reconstruction was after Lincoln and Frederick Douglass created freedom, and the Freedmen's Bank, by the way. And then what was that? Lincoln assassinated. Then here comes the pushback to Reconstruction within 2 years. Mm-hmm. 40 Acres and a Mule was reversed. People don't know that. Here comes Dr. King. Kennedy, Johnson, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He gets assassinated in 68. Within 2 years, here comes Nixon, conservative Republican. Obama, George Floyd's murder. Here comes a pushback. It's fear. But this time is different because what I just said, all the diverse companies are the most profitable, Cam.
Right.
All the diverse regions are the most profitable. This ultimately is a country that's a capitalist democracy. This is about money. So as soon as everybody calms down and gets over their emotions, they're going to realize they actually need us to succeed. That's our moment.
All right.
All right, Reggie, agree or disagree?
Absolutely. Absolutely agree.
Go on, Tommy.
Everything he said, I mean, he hit it. He hit it out the park. Because at the end of the day, you go all the way back, we forget, some of us forget, and all of them forget, that we built this. We built this. And I remember so vividly, you know, when I was a little kid, my mother had a doctorate's degree, but because she came up in a time that her mom and everybody else did day work, day labor, you know, doing their laundry, my mother with a doctorate degree, I would watch her go to Slade Avenue and catch the number 5 bus to go clean some other doctor's house when she had her own doctorate degree in education. And that taught me a valuable lesson because when I was just about 11, 12 years old, she made the mistake of taking me out there with her one day. And this is all dealing with DEI, and I never realized it back then, but I just didn't understand. She took me out there one time, and it was only one time because when she took me out there, the little boy, who was a year younger than me, was calling her by her first name. And I beat him up. I beat him up real good. So she never took me out there again because I refused, being, you know, a young little kid myself, to let some little boy call my mother by her first name and treat her like she was just a slave. And I never understood. I held that against my mom for so many years because she didn't need to do it. But she was acclimated to that mindset because that's what she did when she was going through college and all that type of thing. That's what she did when she was coming up. And she was the first one of her 12 sisters and siblings, well, 11, because she made that, you know, she was the only one who got a proper education. All the other aunts that were older than her never, you know, went past the 6th, 7th, 8th grade because they were on the farm. But that has stuck with me all these years. And when he said all the things he just said now, they are now coming to realize, and until they fully realize, that they can't do it without us. They really can't do it without us. If we removed everything that we as African Americans have done to create, build, and enhance the quality of life overall in this America, KKKA, where would we be? It would be like an uncivilized society. The contributions we've made as a people is what has made this country, you know, be what it is. And the sad irony, because we dealt with this at the workshop on Saturday, the sad irony is they have been for years trying to take what we've done and make it their own. That's why they're banning the books. That's why they're taking credit for everything. We know the true history, but that's why they're trying to get rid of the books. That's why they're trying to get rid of everything that gives anybody credit other than the European, you know, male or, you know, race. So, yeah, I agree with everything he said. I don't want to monopolize the time, but that hits home. That hit home with me, and that brought me back. Like I said, I'm sitting here almost crying because I remember that so vividly. And here we are now that they're talking about DEI, not even realize they were the ones, especially the white women. They were the ones who were the recipients of, you know, the inclusion of the diversity. You know, how many bogus companies, Daryl, you are very aware of this. Look how many minority businesses white women used as a figurehead, you know, to get those multi-million dollar contracts.
Right.
To take the money away from those goals,
And before you go, Monica, let me shout out Cam Newton and Funky Fridays for that.
That was
Cam Newton and John Bryant. So
My God, that's my boy anyway, Bryant.
Yeah, I love John Hope Bryant. Right. I do. And he made a significant point. And you know, we don't want to go back and forth because we know what you're saying is absolutely true. About the greatest benefactor of diversity, equity, and inclusion has been white women, particularly in government contracting and hiring. And so there is no doubt about that. And so that money was able, that economic force, that economic advancement allowed it to stay in their community. And that's fine. That's, you know, we understand that. I think as Black people, we know that. Mm-hmm. And we also know how hard we had to work. And, you know, my heart, you know, started pounding a little bit too when you talked about your mother with a doctorate degree who, you know, had that level of education, but wasn't afforded that opportunity. We had a beautiful sorority sister here. She just recently died at age 101. And we celebrated her just before she passed away, Miss Hetty Love. She was the first African-American woman to graduate from Wharton School of Business. Yes. And although she was married to a physician, she was never able fully to utilize her degree outside of being a community leader and community advocate because she was never able to get hired in the Pennsylvania area. So, you know, we understand that. And, you know, there are so many stories that are like that can really just make us feel sad.
Yes.
And can really make us be angry. But we, as a people, are not those people. We are just not that. You know, we are, you know, Daryl, you talked about it earlier about peace. We are peace-loving people. You know, we come from, you know, the core of Africa.
Yes.
And Africa where everything is plentiful and bountiful.
Oh, my God, yes.
You know, there wasn't this notion of scarcity. You know, personalities, relationships, you know, those are things that are part of the human experience. But if we had the retaliatory notions inside of us, mm-hmm. it would be much worse in this society if we were to really fight.
And it would have happened by now, wouldn't it?
Yes, by now. Yeah.
Like a powder keg, and the wick has been burning for so many years. But I really think we're at this abyss now where, I mean, it's not going to take much, you know, because we're going to sit back. I think, Daryl, you said it best. We're sitting back right now, not being available. But in the sitting, we also, I believe, are mentally preparing for what is to come. And like I said, it's going to get worse because, you know, with each new year, they're growing closer and closer to, like I said, being that major minority. You know,
right.
And, you know, I dread the thing. Like I said, I'm living now for, I just have two little grandchildren, and my youngest granddaughter just turned 5 February 15th. And I just keep wondering, I said, God, if it's your will, let me just see KK, Kaylin is her name, make it till, you know, if I could see her come out of high school and college and possibly get married. And I'm staying healthy as I can to do that. And thank God that, like I said, my latest physical, so I don't have no problem. Don't have to take no medicines. But what is the world going to be like in another 10 years, 15 years? Because the damage that's being done now, if we don't wake up, like I said, we have the Trojan horse right in the midst of us now. And if we don't wake up and do something quick, fast, and in a hurry, it's going to be just like the Roman Empire. Everybody thought that could never fall. I'm a study of history. I love history. We're on that same course right now.
Yeah, well,
we're
definitely on this course. And, you know, I've kind of studied genocide, and in my diversity, equity, and inclusion work, I often talk about the 10 stages of genocide.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we are really at like stage 8.
Right.
You know, where we're persecuting people who don't look like us. You know, we're separating them. They don't need to be here. They're illegal. And this is a country of immigrants. I mean, Trump is an immigrant. You know, his mother and father were both not born in this country, I don't believe. So
they're here because they couldn't. They're here because his grandfather was not allowed back in Germany.
Thank you. Mm. Thank you. And both he and Van sleeping with immigrants. I mean,
yeah.
Make it make sense.
So it doesn't make sense. So it's really, you know, and there's this divisiveness, there's, you know, the polarization portion of it, which is stage 6, the preparations, the executive, you know, the executive orders, talking about D&I, let's, you know, get these people together, and then let's start putting people into Guantanamo Bay, those illegals, you know, shipping them off and things like that. So we're at a point right now at the cusp that we could form a Nazi organization that would be pretty much accepted in this country. But I guess my point is right now is that, you know, we as a people have to change our mindset.
Yes.
And the question is, do we need to be apologists? Or honestly, my mind is preparing in different other ways. You know, I'm like, you know, if I have to live on the fat of the lamb, can I do that?
Exactly.
You know, if I have to give up my house, if I have to give up my job, if I have to do whatever, is that going to change who I am? Because it's really about survival. And and many people I know, I know 2 or 3 families that are moving out of the country.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We know a couple of families that have moved. This was my thought about moving out the country, you know, is because America has the reach that it does have and the global influence. We could find ourselves in a country squashed between the United States and Russia.
Exactly.
That, absolutely. And China.
Absolutely.
It's almost a catch-22 because you know the fight may have to occur while staying here, because if you're somewhere else, you could become even greater collateral damage depending on what war or uprising they want to spark in a secondary country, if that makes any sense.
It does.
It makes a lot of sense. And listen, I was just out. And like everywhere else you go through, anywhere in Europe and Africa right now, they don't want us to come. The Africans, they are very disillusioned by the American African Americans. They are very ashamed of us. And all through the European countries and everything, they really don't want us. And the thing is, I just had this conversation with a good friend of mine whose son wants to go down to the DR. And I'm up there said, do you realize the racism there is worse than it is here? You know? Yeah. I said, so you're going to jump out of the frying pan and go right into the flames. Mm-hmm. And so you better do your research, because a lot of places that I'm hearing a lot of us talk about, well, I'm going here and going there, the welcome mat is not going to be, you know, laid out for you. It's definitely not going
to
be.
Yeah, it's a case to be made about fighting your battles here, because you may be a little bit more surprised than you thought you would going somewhere else, because you don't really understand the climate and the sentiment of people outside of the United States. Cause,
that's it. And half the year, I'm gone. At least.
Guilt by association.
You know, that's it. And so, like I said, they are so embarrassed, you know, like I said, by the actions. Everyone has said the same thing to me. Australia, you know, Norway, you know, London. And they said, we just can't believe the Americans allowed this to happen. Did you all vote for and a felon?
Everyone gets to blame for that, right? Even if you didn't do it. You
know, we all get to blame for it. I've been,
make it make sense. But this waiting for the people of Canada. You see what just happened in Canada. Like I said, about 90% margin, they are pushing back against Trump. And so, like I said, you know, Trudeau stepped down.
That might be our hope there.
And look what the president of Mexico just did. She just put out a nice little op-ed letting them know, like, you want to see hurt? We're going to hurt you a lot more than
you. Well, our country may be saved from our neighbors. You know, you don't know. Exactly. You know, it may be saved by our neighbors. Right. I'm going to cut to a quick commercial, and then we're going to come back with some closing remarks, okay?
Okay.
All right. Hold on.
In a world where convenience meets diversity, there's one marketplace that stands out from the rest. Welcome to Firecart, your ultimate destination for all things shopping. At Firecart, we believe in bringing you not just the everyday essentials, but also a curated selection of cultural and handmade products that celebrate diversity and craftsmanship from around the globe. Whether you're looking for the latest gadgets, trendy fashion pieces, or one-of-a-kind artisanal creations, Firecart has you covered. Our diverse range of products caters to every taste and preference. But that's not all. Introducing our exciting affiliate program, Firestarters, where you have the opportunity to earn money by being a Firecart seller or by referring customers through your affiliate link with generous commissions. Imagine making passive income simply by sharing products you love with your friends and followers. With Firecart, it's not just about shopping, it's about building your own success story. And here's the kicker. During our exclusive launch period, you can take advantage of discounted pricing and special perks available only to our founding members. So why wait? Join the Firecart revolution today and experience shopping like never before. Firecart, where every purchase ignites a world of opportunity. For more information, visit firecart.shop. Your journey to endless possibilities starts now.
Great commercial. Great commercial. That's nice.
Yes. Firecart is one of my pet projects. Yes, the CEO does coding himself sometimes.
Good.
And Firecart is a marketplace, an e-commerce marketplace that we have developed for, like the other marketplaces you all are familiar with, that we will not name here today.
Exactly.
But if if you are an independent seller, if you are a big business, our marketplace allows for you to sell your items without being suppressed on our search engine or without being suppressed in our algorithm. So everyone gets a level playing field. One of the complaints is that they feel that the smaller companies have been drowned out by the larger companies on the more known e-commerce platforms. And also you can have your own affiliate site. So you may not be an originator or a seller, but you can also sell other people's items on your own store and make a commission so you can promote people you like or you like what they do, and you also can get notifications of new products. So we do encourage you to take a look at FireCart. You don't have to abandon the other ones you're on, but you can just go ahead and get on our platform, spread the word around. We're just getting around to talking about it. We've had it. It's mature and developed. And we do have sellers on there now, but we are now starting the process of sharing it to a more broader audience. So we do encourage you to take a good look at FireCart.
Well, I'm definitely going to do that. I definitely want to look into, you know, get some more information on it.
Yes, yes. So, guys, thank you for, you know, today's time. Let's have a little closing takeaway from today. Okay. You know, what did we surmise, learn, or what from this little talk here? And also, shameless plugs. What you doing? What you got going on? Where do you want people to see you, join you, or whatever? So this is your opportunity. I just gave my shameless plug, and that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Well, you can join me on 4th Sundays that I do a love fellowship with our ministry, Atlanta Rain World Outreach, and you can go to rain-usa.org to know about that fellowship at 4:30 on Sunday evenings. Okay, but so first of all, shameless plug, Monica.
Okay, well, thank you, Daryl. you can catch me at Monica. MYOJO USA on Instagram, and I just shut down my public Facebook page, so Instagram, I'm still available on that. And one shameless plug that I do have is that my book is coming out shortly called Effective Communications for a Culturally Changing Constituency.
Right.
And it's a book on how local governments can interact with new people that are coming into their communities, new entrants. Specifically refugee populations and new people that are coming in, primarily those that may speak a language other than English. So that should be coming out. It was actually coming out December 31st, but after the election, I held back because of all the executive orders so I could add some of the information. So it'll be coming out April 1.
Okay, make sure we get that link.
Amazon, and I'll be talking to you about getting it on FireCart as well.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. We got some new authors that are coming on, too, so we're excited. Yes, yes, okay. Absolutely. And Reggie, shameless plug, you got?
Well, I'm going to tell you, the biggest shameless plug I have for today is I want people to tune into the What's Up, What Now podcast.
Uh-huh.
I am excited about this and what we've done today. I'm looking forward to having our chancellor on with us, but Bishop. But I am very excited about this. This is much needed, and I'm still doing what I do. You know, like I said, I'm ripping and running all over the place doing my events, concerts. And more than that, you know, I'm excited about, like I said, the workshops, because I'm in my season now that I'm just trying to empower people. I'm in what I call my give back season. I've really done all I've wanted to do. And like I said, I'm anti all of these things with the award shows and all that type of thing. I'm just beyond all of that foolishness now. So right now, I'm just trying to empower the younger generations of musicians and producers and recording artists to really stand, to just understand they don't need no one to validate their success. Daryl, you are very familiar with the industry itself. Everybody is out there who's claiming to help you. It's all about a ripoff. It's all about you sustaining their dream, not your dream. And so, like I said, that's all I'm doing right now, and I'm going to continue doing that to my dying day. I'm more into my social activism right now than, you know, the recording, because I've been working on my latest project, and I'm not even excited about finishing it now because of the fact that I see what the marketplace is doing. And so that's what I want to shamelessly plug out, What Now podcast. People need to tune into this, and I'm looking forward to us having an audience of 20,000, 50,000, 100,000 real soon before the summer. I'm not no prophet, but I'm saying it's coming. It's on the way.
It's
and so,
coming.
Like I said, I'm telling everybody about it. I even had some people say, well, how can we look at it, tune into it? I said, well, we're getting things up and running, and so I'll be able to give you that information, the link to how you can tune into it for the live, you know, portion of the broadcast, and then be able to pull it up later for those who can't see the live. That's where we are. And I'm excited for Monika, and I'm excited for you, Daryl, and for Chancellor, our bishop. And so let's keep this going. I am making myself available because, like I said, I stay, like I said, in places where I'm celebrated, not tolerated. That's why I stay out of the country more than I stay in. Because, you know, like I said, people just appreciate what you do when you're away. Because here, I'm sick of the clicks. I'm sick of the drama. And I'm getting old now, gray hairs and all that kind of stuff. So I just don't have the patience, tolerance, you know. I just don't have it no more. And listen, I'm excited to let you know, too. My camera and all just arrived today, my new camera. Oh, so cool. I'm going to be able to hook everything up. And so you're going to be able to see it better with my new lighting and all that type of thing. And our next podcast and all that type of thing.
So that's right.
Come, and my backdrop, because it didn't come in time. Just got here. Nice. And I'm going to be like, okay, I don't have time to hook it up and play with it and know what I'm doing. So, yeah, that's where we are. So thank you all for letting me be a part of the team.
I appreciate you all so much. I thank you so much. I think we have a great dialogue here. We have a great team here. And
it's
enough
subject matter, endless subject matter.
It's enough brilliance. Yes, it's enough brilliance here for us to come up and figure something out. We put that on there. Let's figure this out. And I think we can bring at least whatever answers we can infuse into society.
Absolutely.
And if you are a watcher, share with your neighbor. You will also catch us on our podcast network platform, which is BelieveBroadcasting.com. BelieveBroadcasting.com. You can also subscribe to the YouTube at Believe Broadcasting, where you can find this and other podcasts. And we really look forward to you sharing this to the community.
Yeah.
And there are people that are not getting some of the information that we share here. And that's why we have come to occupy this little piece of real estate so that we can be a part of the ecosystem to get the information needed out to those who may not be listening to other shows or watching the news. So please share this with your friends, with your family, and your loved ones, and those that you know that need to be informed. Well, guys, thank you so much. And everyone,
wait, girl, say it one more time for me.
BelieveBroadcasting.com.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
BelieveBroadcasting.com.
Right. Okay.
Yes. Right. And at Believe Broadcasting on YouTube. And you can also follow Believe on any other social platform. It's all at Believe Broadcasting. Okay.
Perfect.
So
okay.
Thank you all so much. I appreciate your participation, and I appreciate you all being a supporter and future supporters of the podcast. This is Daryl Elliott, and I want to thank you all for watching, and we're going to catch you all the next time. Let's figure this out.
All right.
Peace.
Peace out. All right. Take care, everyone.
Goodbye, everyone.
All right. Bye-bye.